Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name is Simon Smart. Well, Christianity has had a very interesting, sometimes troubled history in China. These days, according to reports, the Christian church, both official and unofficial, is growing incredibly quickly in the most populated country on earth. Now, this is a subject of great interest for Robert and Linda Banks, who are authors of View from the Faraway Pagoda, an Australian missionary in China. This book tells the story of a young Australian woman, Sophie Newton, who was a missionary to China from 1897 to 1931, spanning a tumultuous time in that part of the world. Sophie was Robert's grand aunt, so not only is this a fascinating story, but it's a personal one. Rob, tell us, good to have you both in. Welcome.
Thank you.
Rob, tell us, first of all, how you got interested in this story.
Two ways. One, I met her towards the end of her life. I only spent an hour and a half with her, and she deeply impressed me. Put me through the grill a bit about what I was doing and where I was heading and all that. And then when she died, to my amazement, she left her personal papers to me in her will amongst all the other members of the family. And it was ruffling through those that got me thinking there's a story somewhere here perhaps which one day might have to be told.
It sounds like she picked you out from the crowd there, and it was sort of that's a bit of a legacy that you sort of had to carry, isn't it? Now, Sophie Newton, when she first headed out to China, was not long after a terrible massacre of some missionary women, the Ku Cheng Martyrs, they're known as. Now, some people might have thought it foolhardy to go at that time. Linda, what gave Sophie such resolve in going when she did?
Well, I guess the Huaseng or the Kuching massacre in 1895 was a catalyst for her to go. But 5 years earlier, she had met a number of people who had been to China, had come to Sydney, and talked about the tremendous need of people living there, and particularly women who needed education and needed help medically and so on. And she was very motivated by that, as well as by a deep Christian faith that she had. So she had all kinds of experiences as a younger woman. She had been a governess out in the country. She was the daughter of a country doctor, and so she was used to roughing it a bit, I suppose. And then they moved to Sydney in the 1890s with the Depression, and her father died, and then she worked in local inner city slum areas, really, as a women's helper, a worker, and got a lot of experience that way. So I guess her life experiences had pushed her to seeing the needs of people, and particularly the needs of Chinese people, whom she actually had worked with in Sydney as well before she went to Fuzhou.
Right, so there was a sense of, in a way, life before this was in some
absolutely.
Ways a preparation
yeah,
for
that's
it.
Right. I mean, nothing really prepares you for being there in 1897, but no. she went.
No, let's talk about that. Rob, what was it like? What was China like? As a place for her, for Sophie to go to. Can you give us a bit of a feel for that?
A big country, of course, and had something like 400 million people, so it was large. Even villages often had between 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people, not what we would think as a village. And a lot of unrest, partly because it's a very diverse country. It's a country of different countries in a way, and lots of people have sort of issues with one another. The West had intruded, not always in very positive ways, particularly claiming the ports up and down the East Coast to trade opium into China and make bags of money. And many Chinese were beginning to get rather upset about that. They saw Westerners turning over traditional Chinese ways as well. And that's what, of course, partly lay behind this massacre of people in 1895. Just a bunch of them up on the mountain copped it because they were there and nobody else was around. The police were three Australians amongst them, all young. And so it was a time of some ferment, and it was only a few years in when the whole Boxer Rebellion erupted, particularly in the north of the country, with hundreds of thousands of people armed and fighting the British and the French and the Germans. So it was a place of some turmoil.
Linda, tell us about Sophie's work there. What was she actually doing? Now, she was obviously there as a Christian missionary, mm-hmm. so she's trying to spread the gospel, but she's also dispensing medicine, she's working with the poor, there's education is an important part of this. There's a sense in which she was trying to contribute to the common good, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the work that missionaries generally did was really profound for that society. I mean, the product of the educational, medical help that those, particularly women, received is actually helped to build the modern China, where you have women who were educated and now are the doctors and the lawyers and those people from those early times, because women were just not educated. She was involved, as were other missionaries, in the whole anti-foot-binding movement, which, if you have read any Chinese history, will know it was a form of keeping women under control, suppressed, really. It usually happened in the upper classes, where women couldn't do anything. Their feet were so tiny because they were seen as being more marriageable. So she was involved in helping to provide alternatives for some of these women. She was involved in the anti infanticide movements as well, where there were little post boxes all around the countryside, where often next to a river, where often the father would take the female child, post it in the posting box, and it would be gone. Missionaries in that province often rescued children who had been buried in shallow graves who were still alive and took them to an orphanage. You know, they did amazingly brave things. They taught women strategies of how to deal with their opium-addicted husbands and things like that. And they just gave them hope, which was wonderful.
You get a real sense of that from the book, the way they were really working, especially among the women, and changing life for the women, but also ultimately for the men as well.
I mean, the men didn't always like those changes. No. But they happened over time.
I also got the sense from the book that they didn't sort of stay in the mission and wait for people to come to them. They were out there among the people. I mean, this is kind of fiery stuff, isn't it?
They travelled huge.
She's a really interesting person, a bit of a force to be reckoned with, I imagine.
Yeah, I think they all were fairly strong women, but Sophie definitely, yeah. They walked huge distances or were carried in sedan chairs a long way up, high mountains and so on. Yeah, they were tough. They were pioneering people. One of her colleagues was Amy Oxley, who is the, on one side of the family, John Oxley, the colony surveyor. Yeah, mm-hmm. And on the other side, the Reverend Samuel Marsden was her great-grandfather, and she built a blind school, which still exists to this day, and nothing was going to stop. And that's the kind of people that they were. They were a strong Australian pioneering stock, and they worked well together.
I must admit, it made me feel fairly inadequate reading the story myself, I have to say. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm talking to Robert and Linda Banks about their book, View from the Faraway Pagoda, an Australian missionary in China, which tells the story of Sophie Newton and her travels and adventures in China from the 1890s. Now, Rob, how difficult was it for Sophie and her colleagues doing all this work in what was a very, very different culture, a very foreign culture, right?
I think the challenges were pretty strong, but they just assumed them and went for it. And the challenges weren't just resistance sometimes from men and occasionally from women about what they were doing. There were social and wider political forces to be reckoned with. The country went up and down, the district went up and down, out of good control into warlord fiefdoms, warring with one another, bandit groups appearing and roving around, raiding villages from time to time, sometimes capturing missionaries and holding them for ransom. And then, if that wasn't enough, the annual typhoons which hit the coast of Fuzhou every June or July, floods, wrecking agriculture, plagues. Regularly, thousands of people died at their doorstep. It's one of these women actually survived some of this, the sickness, let alone the natural havoc that was caused. So all of this made it, I think, quite a challenge.
It's fairly fashionable today to think of any missionary enterprise as kind of negative and destructive of local cultures. You don't get that sense, though, from reading this story.
No, I mean, there were some who were upset that some traditions were being challenged or overturned. But some of the ways things were done weren't good for anybody, actually, male or female. And so that began to be seen quite quickly. And the fact that these women and the men too, though there were fewer, were seeking to build people up to strengthen their capacity to work, to raise their level of performance, to contribute to the society around them, began to be noticed. And it's good to see it's now being recognised much more in the country at large. Christianity is not thought of purely as an imperial Western invasion. It's now regarded at its best anyway as something which was good for China and contributed to the making of modern China.
Yes, Linda, she was doing all this work with education, medicine, challenging some of the less savoury local practices. She's also trying to win people over to the Christian vision of life. Did many people respond to that?
We've actually met people who are still alive today who knew her and were part of that whole network of people who became Christian because of her influence. She was the first deaconess, Anglican deaconess, to be appointed in the province. And so she had an influence on a number of other Christian women as well, and helping to train them. So, yeah, I guess she was involved in training up people to go to the villages as well as to share the gospel. And so I guess, yeah, you could say she was effective, but it was a hard slog. And the population of China is so huge. So the little dint that you make in that is quite small, sadly.
The little church she was associated with, that had existed before she went there, founded by a Chinese pastor, is now the biggest church in the provincial city of Lianjiang, as it's called, just out of Fuzhou. But as a result of the missionary effort in that province as a whole, it's one of the most Christian provinces in the country. And the latest statistics, which are hard to actually be fully accurate about, would suggest that somewhere around perhaps 12, 13, 14% of the whole province connect with a Christian church every Sunday, which even by Australian standards is pretty striking, actually.
Now, Linda, Sophie talks about China as being a dark and sad land, but it's one she came to love being in. And you get this sense in the book that this was a kind of a life full of joy, that she, when she wasn't there, she sort of couldn't wait to get back there. She had trips back to Australia. But did you detect in this a real love for the people she was trying to reach?
Oh, most definitely. Her heart was always there. I mean, she had to come home at age 65 because that's what the mission said she had to do. But if she could have, she would have stayed. And she came home in 1931 and she lived for another nearly 25 years. And during that whole period, she had connections with China. She was writing letters, she was raising money. You'd go to her house and there'd be a little box at the entrance saying, you know, money for China. Or she'd knit things and send it back to babies that she knew that were being born in China. It was constantly on her heart. There were some significant visitors that even came to see her, like Bishop Michael Chang, who was the last Anglican bishop before the cultural change, big time. He was imprisoned, but he came in the 40s and he visited dear little Sophie up in the Blue Mountains. You know, that's... So she was constantly being connected to people like that, and praying and sending money and encouraging others to do the same. It's a great story.
Thanks for coming in and talking about it. The book's called View from a Faraway Pagoda, an Australian Missionary in China. Excellent story. Good to get your thoughts on it. Thanks, Linda and Robert.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.